The Israel Report with Rolly Marks for the latest information and the stories behind the news.
Hello, Rolene.
The equally lovely Dina Diamond, and I can't say that I have been vodka tasting here. Usually on a Thursday in my office, it's a whiskey Thursday because I feel like I have to do something in solidarity with the shenanigans in the studio over there.
See, that's what we like about you, is your empathy with the studio over here. It's fantastic.
I always try to empathize, Dean. Always try to empathize.
Absolutely. And how is the Holy Land today?
Report with news that we have students missing because of a trip to the area around the Dead Sea today. One student is still missing because of flash floods. 14 others from a group that from a nearby yeshiva that was a pre-military yeshiva. The youth had taken a day trip to the area, and because of flash floods, were swept away by very rapid moving waters. We know that police and rescue services anticipating possibly working through the night, if not to rescue, then to retrieve. We have heard from Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu, who has said, "I send strength the security and rescue services that are working to save lives and find those missing in this terrible tragedy, and we are all praying for better news." We do know that one student is still missing, and there are 8 in critical condition who have been airlifted to nearby Soroka Hospital in Be'er Sheva. But darkness is falling. The roads are very, very treacherous at the moment. We know from Magen David Adom that paramedics treated a 40-year-old woman who was injured when a falling tree crushed her car in the north of the country. So if you are listening, if you are in Israel at the moment, please be very, very safe on the roads. They are very, very treacherous and very unusual for this time of the year, storm warnings.
Sure, Natalie, that is terrible. I don't actually ever recall hearing like warnings of this kind in Israel. Is that something that has happened before?
We have had on the occasion, especially in the areas where flash floods occur, we have had warnings, but this is very, very, very uncharacteristic weather for this time of the year. It's nearing the end of April, and we are usually going into the summer, but we have 3 days of extreme storms, and we have had warnings from police, from Magen David Adom, to please try and avoid areas that are hit very, very intensely by the storms. Yesterday, we had visuals and news of floods in areas like Tel Aviv. Today, visuals coming in from Jerusalem that there have been the floods, the streets are flooded from all over the country. And for those who are listening, to please err on caution.
Sure, Rony, that is really harsh news. Sorry. We wish all those that are missing and all the families strength, and we hope that they're all found and that they're all well. And yes, please do just be careful. Moving on further on to the news about the Czech Republic announcing the 3-point plan to move the embassy, which is a positive story. So moving on to that one. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, this is quite incredible. You know, when Trump made his announcement on the 6th of December, the Czech Republic were the first to show solidarity with President Trump to support his announcement. And actually, I was in Prague, the capital of the Czech Republic, on that day. Dina, it wasn't me. I had no influence. I'm just saying I was in Prague on that day.
The circle of influence does stretch far.
I do try. You know, as I say, I like to show empathy. But we have had news from the president of the Czech Republic last night, who said that they are going to start a process that will see the country's diplomatic missions move from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. It's not clear when the actual embassy will move or if Prague will open an actual embassy in the Holy City, but this is the proposed timeline. So what they say they are going to do is they are going to engage in 3 phases. The first will be the moving of the consular. And this was announced last night at an event to celebrate Yom HaAtzmaut at Prague Castle. And this is also momentous because it's the first time another country besides for the Czech Republic has been fated with this honor to have their Independence Day celebrated at the castle in Prague. And if you ever do get to Prague, visit the castle. It's quite magnificent. The second phase will be the institutions like Czech Invest, Czech Trade, Czech Tourism, and the Czech Center, all moving from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And the proposed final stage would be the moving of the actual embassy. So this still has to be voted in, but it looks like it's going to go through. It's going to be passed. And this is quite a phenomenal moment for Israel and for Czech-Israel relations.
Yeah, it looks like in terms of how all the embassy moves are coming along, is that it's becoming quite a political game in terms of showing support for Israel and where they stand. I mean, it really, I think from the United States leading the charge, obviously, and then what was it, Guatemala following suit. I think that another showing of an actual European country being the Czech Republic is actually quite a sort of a feather in the cap of Israel.
That's exactly it. It is very, very significant that we do see a European country, especially breaking with protocol from the European Union, which is that the capital of Israel and a potential or future Palestinian state still has to be negotiated, and they support perhaps dividing Jerusalem between the two peoples. But the Czech Republic making or taking quite a significant stance by putting forward this three-pronged proposal. And I think there's also a measure of security or concerns that are coming from the Czechs, because we do anticipate that around about the 15th of May, we are going to see an uptick in violence, definitely protests on our southern borders, and perhaps a lot of protests, not just from Gaza, but the West Bank and Jerusalem as well, as the Honduras, Guatemala, and the United States all prepare to move their embassies to the capital.
I know, the true capital, indeed. But I saw that Hamas actually had an official warning that the border protests will continue after May 15th.
Well, this is Ismail Haniyeh. Ismail Haniyeh is the head of the Hamas Political Bureau, and he has threatened the Trump administration that they will receive the slap of the century instead of receiving the deal of the century, and that the so-called Great March of Return demonstration would spread to Palestinian-controlled areas of the West Bank, and that these protests will continue after May the 15th, which to Palestinians is known as Nakba Day. To Israelis, we say the true Nakba is that we could have had an agreement and two states 70 years ago. Instead, we have this never-ending cycle of conflict and political consternation, and at times outpouring of violence. And just to remind our listeners that these are not peaceful protests. These protests have been quite violent. They have resulted in the death of 38 Palestinian writers as a result of shooting at our soldiers, planting explosives along the border fence, trying to breach the border fence, flying kite bombs over the fence to try and burn Israeli fields, the burning of tires, which created terrible health concerns along the border in the south. I was there breathing in some of the very, very toxic fumes, not very, very nice indeed, and this is anything but peaceful.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think we've seen that historically, that if true peace was required by Hamas, they wouldn't be actually staging these protests, because they're not protecting the people. It's not in the interests of the people. It's the interests of their own self-serving political gain. So, I think that just continues as a trend. Do you think there'll ever be an end to that?
Well, I think as long as the global media seem to pander to the visuals, Hamas know that this is a winning strategy for them. I think that there has to be a complete change in, I won't use the word ideology, but in philosophy, insofar as their charter, even though they have softened the language, is still genocidal. They still refuse to recognize the existence of the state of Israel, and there's still the matter of educating generations to hate. And all this has to change before we move towards some kind of sincere movement towards peace. This is this hatred for Israel, this calling for the genocide of Israel, or for Israel to be wiped off the map or thrown from the river to the sea, is an ingrained hatred. And sadly, we see this spill out. And the longer that we have NGOs and that we have people who believe that Hamas's strategy is noble, we will have a problem, because it plays right into the hands of terror. And just to be reminded that Hamas is recognized internationally as a terror organization and not a the political representative of the Palestinian people, but rather a nefarious terror organization that cannot be trusted.
Absolutely. And with that, actually, now it's, I actually saw that Jordan want to strip Abbas and the other Palestinian officials of their citizenship.
Yeah, well, isn't this interesting? So Jordan has made a move that they will strip Mahmoud Abbas, the president, and very, very senior Palestinian Authority members like PA negotiator Saeb Erekat and Abu Alaa, and approximately 30 other senior PA and Fatah officials and their families. They are going to lose their citizenship rights, what they had requested and received many, many years ago. So what this also entails is that should they visit Jordan, they will only be allocated temporary visitors' visas. And one of the reasons or rationale is that the Jordanians want them to kind of galvanize or consolidate their Palestinian identity. But the Hashemite Kingdom, and many of you might know that Palestinians in the West Bank originally come from the area that we now know as Jordan. Jordan has decided that they are going to revoke the citizenship of tens of thousands of Palestinians. And their rationale is this consolidation, and they also say that if they're not proud of their citizenship, then they don't deserve to speak on their behalf. This is very, very interesting, because very often we see other countries around the world and a lot of criticism coming towards Israel for our treatment of people who don't subscribe to the right of return or don't fit the profile. And I think that this is discrimination on behalf of the Hashemite Kingdom.
Absolutely. And I mean, when you talk about a right of return, surely they have a right of return to Jordan as well, seeing that Jordan was actually part of historically of Israel, and Jordan actually had control of that area.
Well, the West Bank was part of Jordan, yes. And most West Bank Palestinians come from Jordan. But I think, you know, very often some countries, I won't mention which names, are accused of practicing apartheid against Palestinians or Arabs. And this, to me, is apartheid, because this is really giving or paving the way for Palestinians to have second-class citizenship, which they have already insofar as the way that Jordan treats them. But that's just me, Dean. I mean, it's far from me to point a finger.
Absolutely.
You know, Lebanon or Jordan and this.
She's just pointing right and left.
There we go.
I'm just pointing right and left all over the place for second-class citizenship.
Rolene, can I ask you a question? What is the status of a Palestinian today in the international community? What is the international status?
Well, excellent question. The Palestinians, right now, their status is that they seem to be dropping on the list of priority conflicts around the world. If we look at the Middle East, people are more, or world leaders are more concerned with the situation with Iran, with the situation in Syria, with the situation insofar as we've seen Daesh, or the Islamic State, spread their ideology throughout the Middle East. The Middle East is in a very, very precarious position at the moment. There is a lot of interest shown in the warming of relations between the Saudis and Israel, and also of the Gulf states. And the now forming of an axis between the Gulf states and the Saudis and Israel and the US and Iran, perhaps Russia, Syria, and their other proxies. So we are seeing very much a polarization of countries in the Middle East. What does this mean for the Palestinians? Well, it means that they slip down further and further and further on the list of priorities, which is why we see actions like we do right now on our border with Gaza, because they are trying to reaffirm their importance. And I think the world is getting fed up with the fact that the leadership of the Palestinians is somewhat recalcitrant and doesn't really want to sit down and enter into any kind of negotiations. Now, some people say, yeah, but, you know, that's Israel's fault. You know, it takes two to make peace.
Oh, we seem to have lost Rolene. Rolene, are you with us?
I'm talking to myself and no one's listening.
Sorry, we're here. We're listening to you.
Would it be a first time?
Carry on. play on.
I was talking away to myself and no one was listening, but I'm back. It's these stormy conditions here in Israel wreaking havoc all over the country. But as I was saying, that there's a lot of criticism for the peace process at the moment. Some saying that Prime Minister Netanyahu perhaps is not sincere about making peace, even though he has announced at the United Nations and at other venues that he will meet the Palestinians anytime, anywhere. I think there is just a lot of fatigue from world leaders about moving forward with any kind of peace agreement.
But it's such a tiny little country, as I've said, like it's smaller than the Kruger National Park, and it gets such global attention. It actually still fascinates me daily. I mean, people can't even find it on a map. It doesn't even exist on a map because sometimes you can't even write on it. It's so tiny. So the attention that it gets is actually beyond fascinating. But now talking about global events, Germany, the Kippur March going on in Berlin. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, this is quite fascinating because just about an hour ago, we had visuals coming in from the Bundestag, the German parliament, and the parliamentary members were also attended meetings in the Bundestag today wearing kippot, saying they are doing it in solidarity because an attack against the Jews is an attack against all of Germany, and we cannot allow for Germany to become or for anti-Semitism to be commonplace in Germany ever again. So that's quite incredible. Now, where Kippur March kind of came to consciousness in Berlin was the attack a couple of weeks ago by an Arab Israeli who conducted an experiment where he didn't believe that it was that unsafe to walk around with a kippah in Berlin, and he was attacked for his actions, and it left him very, very shaken and very, very upset. And the German the German Jewish community in Berlin appealed to people to come out in solidarity by wearing kippot. And we know that there were about 2,000 people in Berlin yesterday, and there were marches in solidarity in other cities, in places like Köln, in places like Laufe, and other places all over the country. And I really practiced being able to say Köln properly, Deans. I spent my time
brilliant.
Practicing
I can't
today.
Even do my German accent today, but it's great. Yeah.
We also know that German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas, he tweeted a picture of himself wearing a kippah saying that it's basically untenable. We must show that they are not alone. So it is coming to global consciousness. We also saw events in France over the last couple of months, people starting to stand up to anti-Semitism. I wish this would be catchy and happen in the UK, because we had news coming in within the hour of yet another politician, this time not from the Labour Party but from the Conservative Party, who tweeted something anti-Semitic and has subsequently been suspended. Labour Party, please take note. But slowly we are starting to see these acts of solidarity against anti-Semitism. But you know, enough is enough. We need to see something tachlis.
Absolutely.
We need to see real actions.
Commitment to also non-discrimination of anyone is not acceptable. Discrimination in general. All right, Rosa, exactly. That's unfortunately where we're going to have to leave it. You've got so much to tell us, but always just a limited time. But thank you so much again for your insights, your invaluable comments, your everything that you give us, and we hope that and pray that those children are found and they're all safe. Thank you so much.
Amen. Shabbat shalom, everybody.
Shabbat shalom.